And now it's time for the Sports Kings from Queens.
Hello, we are the Sports Kings from Queens. Today is Wednesday, March 29th. I'm Gino. I'm here with Darren. I'm here with Kevin. You can listen to us anywhere you get your podcast. Please like and subscribe. Follow us on Facebook. Send us posts. Talk to us. Send us some questions. We want to answer whatever you got to ask us. We're going to talk some March Madness tonight. We got MLB. We'll toss in some NBA, some NHL. We got some NFL news. We got horse race. We got a lot of things going on. Let's get it started, guys. March Madness is just absolutely crazy. We are down in the Final Four. We got four teams left. Is there a one seed? No. Is there a two seed? No. Is there a three seed? No. There's one 4 seed left. There's 2 5-seeds and a 9-seed. The madness is taking over the tournament. Since 1979, this is only the 4th time that we have no number one seeds in the Final Four. It's happened in 1980, 2006, 2011, 2023. Let's get it started, Darren. Talk to me about some of the college basketball action. Last week we were at 16. Right now we are at 4.
It was really kind of – it was good basketball, to be perfectly honest with you. I mean – you know, you look at the four teams that got through. San Diego State, 5-seed. We all kind of liked them. They were playing an upstart like Charleston in the 5-12 matchup. We all ended up picking San Diego State, but we all wanted to pick Charleston. It was one of those type of weird things, right? Florida Atlantic, who was a 9-seed. They didn't even have to play the 1 because the 16 knocked them out. But then they came back and they beat the 3 and the 4. Probably the hardest road of any team after the second round of the tournament. They beat they were trailing Memphis most of that game, guys. They were this close to being eliminated in the first round. There was a technical called on Lomax pretty well in deep into the second half that kind of turned the tide in that game. Gino and I are playing. Gino's playing 3-card poker. I'm walking around trying to find something. I'm watching the game, and because we weren't watching it in the book at that time. Gino was playing some tables, and I'm glued to this game, and you know, they found their own way of getting it done. Miami, you know, they lost to Drake had the game. Drake had him knocked out in the first round.
It should have been over. It should have been over.
And then the last 3 minutes, Miami just kind of came back and made everything happen. And then you look at the fourth squad, which was UConn, who has never been threatened outside of the first half of the Iona game where they trailed at the break. I mean, St. Mary's stuck with them for a half, too. Don't get me wrong. They've won all 4 games by double digits. So you get these 4 teams all coming from completely different ways. Kev?
I think I heard the stat today that all 4 Final Four teams are trailing in the first half of the first round games. And they all came back. They all had a chance of losing the first round.
I think that Miami was the one that was really close, but Florida Atlantic wasn't far behind. Let's put it that way. Yeah. Those 2 teams were the 2 that you thought – 10-minute mark, I thought both of them were going to lose.
Yep.
At the 6-minute mark, I thought both of them were going to lose. Three-minute mark, I still thought Drake was going to win at the 3-minute mark. I'm sorry, Kev. I didn't mean to cut you off. Sorry.
I was going to say, you know, like I said, UConn, you expected them to come around the second half and turn it on and beat Iona. And then Kansas State, you expected them to probably turn around and win their game, too, in the first round. But like you said, the first two San Diego State and FAU. I'm getting confused. Miami.
Yeah, well, Miami and FAU were the two teams trailing with about 6 to play.
Yep.
And Miami was trailing much further than that.
I can't read my own notes.
Well, I mean, you can't for the first time you have notes, and now you can't read them. It's you're better off winging it, buddy. Better off winging it. So, I mean, when we get down to these teams, though, I mean, San Diego State, they had to beat the best team in the tournament. They had to beat Alabama, and they did. Held them to 64 points, something a lot of teams haven't done. Tennessee did it during the year, but not something easily done. They held Miller to 3-for-19 shooting, 1-for-10 from 3, had 9 points, 11 rebounds, 3 assists, and 6 turnovers.
We talked about his bad game in the SEC tournament, too.
Absolutely. But the top 4 scorers of Miller, Clowney, Quinnerly, and Sears shot 12 for 49, 24% from the floor, and 2 for 23 from 3. They had 8 assists and 11 turnovers. I mean, when their 4 best guys can't do it, you know, it was amazing. Darian Trammell, who on San Diego State scored 21, he poured it in. Had an amazing game. Because the Aztecs, the one thing about this team is that their best player is yet to show up in this tournament. Bradley is shooting 30%, and he's the only guy to average double figures. Remember we talked about in the beginning of the tournament, this team only has one double-digit scorer average. Their leading scorer is averaging less than 8 points a game in the tournament. And he is yet to be the guy. He was not good the other day. He was not good against Alabama either. And now all of a sudden you look at this team and you're right there. You're in the Final Four and you're the favorite to go to the championship game. And then you had the Creighton game. And I think this is one we could all discuss. We were watching without volume. We were doing our fantasy baseball draft. And for some reason I was having trouble getting the volume up on the screen for some reason. But the foul call with 1.2 seconds. Kev? Thoughts on the foul call 1.2?
It was a foul.
It was.
Nothing you can say. I mean, it wasn't questionable. I thought, you know, it was clearly the guy had the step and it got pushed from behind. It was clearly a foul. It clearly affected the shot. You have to call that one. And I hate to see a game decide on the call, but you had to call that one, I thought. It affected the shot.
Very physical game, though. A lot of things will let go. But Gino, give us the thought on this.
It's a foul, okay? Let's make sure we understand. But it's times like that where we all want the ref to let them play so that the game isn't decided by a call because of a foul. Now, the only thing, and I've heard this a lot during the week, the only thing with this is that basically the refs had the whistle in their pocket the whole night. Okay, they only attempted, what was it? They only called 22 fouls or something the whole game. I mean, there's not many foul shots taken. They're not calling these fouls, so there's a certain consistency that the players, I'm assuming, have adapted to through the course of this game. They know what the ref is calling, what they're not calling. But it's the same thing, and we say this all the time. We said this with the call from the NFL playoffs where he hit him out of bounds, and we say this all the time. We want the ref to put the whistle away, but, you know, 10 years from now, you show somebody a call, you show somebody that play, they're going to say, yeah, it was a foul. Without context on the game clock, they're going to tell you it's a foul. So
here's the thing, though, G. With 1.2 seconds left or not, I don't know how many pushes in the back that they swallowed the whistle on. They could have been swallowing the whistle on hand checking the whole night. They could have been swallowing the whistle on over the back or defensive rebounds all night. I can't count. I wasn't paying attention enough to how many pushes in the back while a guy is shooting a runner in the lane that they ate the whistle on. It's the only argument against. Now, of course, just to give everybody a little context, Gino had a little bit of cashish on the San Diego State team. So my prediction was that I said, make him miss the first one so he has to sweat it out. And he did. Darian Trammell did a nice job for me. Did hit the second one. And I told you he would. He's a senior. He's going to do that. But, wow. It was I thought, you know, they came back. Creighton had the lead on them. They were up eight. They kind of stormed back. San Diego State controlled Alabama. They were controlled by Creighton a lot. But Creighton, again, another team. This San Diego State defense, I don't know if it's their defense or if teams are just intimidated by him. Would they shoot 2 for 17 from three? I mean, Creighton didn't look like they missed in previous games. When they played Baylor, I don't know if they missed a shot. And they went 2 for 17 from three. And then, you know, again, Bradley doesn't show up. But Butler and Trammell put up 18 and 12, respectively, to put them over the top. And the Aztecs will need Bradley if they're going to keep going because this Florida Atlantic team is a very different animal. You know, when you look at them, Florida Atlantic, they had the rough first half against Tennessee. Tennessee looked like they were in control, and then they turned it on. If I was to tell you out of all these teams, the team with the best offensive rebounding team in this tournament is Florida Atlantic. They average 14 offensive rebounds a game in this tournament. Connecticut averages 10. Miami averages 9. You know, San Diego State averages 10, maybe 11, a little over 10 and a half, I think. But Florida Atlantic, who doesn't have a lot of size, they have the one big guy, they attack the glass. They took over against Tennessee, never looked back, held Tennessee to 33% shooting, and they had a balanced attack. And they shot the lights out against K-State, who had really one guy show up. I mean, just a little aside, I don't need to see Drew Timmy's parents every time he scores a bucket. I don't need to see Marquise's brother, Marcus Noel, mother real original on those names, every time he scores a bucket, you know, show some of the other family members. Show somebody else. I mean, do I have to see the same people over and over again? I mean, Duke didn't even go far. I feel like I saw John Shire's parents 40 times. Stop. Stop with the crap.
How many times do we have to see Mrs. Krzyzewski during a Duke game?
Oh, it's devastating. No? And then out of all the head coaches over all those years, Krzyzewski was the only one that would never interview when he led at the half. He always had an assistant do it because he was above it. Pain in my butt. Anyway, Florida Atlantic did everything they possibly could do right. They held on against Kansas State. They had a lead. K-State fought back gamely, to be honest with you. Took the lead by six. Went up actually by seven at one point. Every time they had the ball up six or seven, they would turn it over. And Florida Atlantic would go on these runs. And we have that first matchup of San Diego State, Florida Atlantic, which none of us thought. We were all hoping Florida Atlantic would get in the tournament if they didn't win their conference tournament. And now you look at the conference, and we'll talk about the NIT more in a little bit. This is one of the more athletic conferences in the country when you watch these teams play. I mean, this is not a fluke. This isn't a joke, Kev.
One of those fluky little stats that I like to look at from time to time. The College Basketball Invitational, the third of the three postseason tournaments. It's a pay-to-play tournament. Charlotte got in there, won it. So they were 4-0. NIT, they had two teams in there, UAB and North Texas. They are meeting in the finals. Florida Atlantic, the only Conference USA team to get into the NCAA tournament, are in the Final Four. They are a combined 16-0.
One of them is going to lose. One of them is going to lose this week on Friday. But or is it Thursday or Friday? I'm not even sure when the final is. But Texas and UAB. Yeah. But yeah, it's an amazing stat, right? You know, so I mean, and Florida Atlantic won their games differently. They had played great defense against Tennessee. They just dominated the boards against Kansas State. They doubled them up on the boards. Rebounding can be one of the most overrated, overhyped stats in the sport because you really have to look at offensive rebounding. If a team just keeps missing and you keep getting the defensive rebound, so be it. You're going to out-rebound your opponent because they can't hit a shot. But they out-offensive rebounded Kansas State 12-3. I mean, just put it in perspective. They got 80% of the offensive rebounds of the game. I mean, that's how good a rebounding this team this is. I mean, Kansas State, not a great rebounding team, but wow, they just owned them. Then we go Miami, right? They pretty much outplayed Houston. Houston wasn't really there. I mean, Sasser played, healthy, everything. Miami was the better team. Cougars made a run early in the second half to cut it to two, and then Miami exploded again. And, you know, I'm still kicking myself for switching to Texas A&M from Miami because I had them both in the eight, and I went back and forth three times, and I went with A&M like an idiot. But that backcourt with Miller, so you take the three of them, is just downright incredible. All five starters that scored a double figures in the Houston game. They shot 52% from the floor, 44% from three, 82% from the line. They really didn't miss. They put up 89 against a team that averages giving up about 60. So they did it all the right way. And then they come back, and they were down 13 in the Texas game in the second half. They were down 13 with 13 to play. And they weren't going away. Texas wasn't missing. Texas wasn't missing for a while. And then all of a sudden they slipped up a little bit. And you can't have a better line than Miller had. 7-for-7 from the floor, 13-for-13 from the line. It just doesn't get any better than that for your 27 points. You really can't miss anything with that. They didn't hit one three-point shot in the second half. Storm back from down 13. You never hear about that. They were just beating them inside. Kev?
Yeah, from the time Texas led 67-50 with 10-14 left. So they're still up 12 with 10 minutes left. From that point on, Miami went 19-for-21 from the foul line. That's unheard of. They didn't make that many shots. They only made about four or five shots.
But they did shoot 59% from the floor for the game.
But the 19-for-21 from the foul line, that's tough to watch when you're the other team because you can't defend it.
No, I mean, the thing is that the combination of Pac, Wong, and Miller is really, really tough to compete with. And I think everybody's got UConn dancing over this team. I don't think it's going to be that simple. Even though UConn has been probably the best team in the tournament, just get to the last squad. UConn had the easiest road. They completely controlled both games they were in. They bombed a good Arkansas team. I picked UConn on my sheet, and I went with Arkansas on our picks. I like Arkansas beating Kansas. I was like, well, they're scrappy, and Musselman's got them playing. They were Final 18 last year and all that stuff. And then what they did to Gonzaga.
They destroyed them.
Oh, my God. They held Gonzaga to 54 points. This team averages 87. And they put up 82.
At one point,
it wasn't like they were sitting on the ball. They put
at one point the lead was 33, Darren. It was 33 at one point.
They only got on the 30 because they pulled the starters late. And then they pulled the second team late. Everybody was hitting. I mean, yeah. Timmy had it so easy against UCLA without the starting center. And then he had a battle. And then we were talking about it. I mean, we'll get into it a little bit more about fouls away from the ball and stuff. I thought there was a couple calls that they don't need to make in certain spots with the superstar player, but they were made. And Gonzaga had no answers. It's not like they don't have Watson sitting there who's a seven-footer as well. It's not like they don't – and they don't have Greg who's 7'1". It's not like they don't have size to compete with UConn without Timmy. But they were just obliterated. They held Gonzaga to 33% shooting. They had seven guys in double figures. Jordan Hawkins led both games, really, and they dominated the boards. They shot 57% from the floor against Arkansas. They were just good the whole weekend. So you have four different teams that had four different ways of getting here. Connecticut looks the easiest. So let's get observations, boys. What'd you think of these games? Now that I went through it, Kev.
Yeah, like you said, we had three really close ones, and then the blowout. Starting with FAU, Kansas State, the largest lead in the game, I think FAU had an 8-point lead at one point. Kansas State's biggest lead was 7, so it was nip and tuck throughout. Good job by FAU to hold off Kansas State late. I was shocked that Kansas State couldn't get the last shot off.
It was funny that they had a triple team on Masood. I mean, you would have thought. I mean, they had Noel wrapped up, and then they really just covered Masood, who is their best shooter, pure shooter. You don't see that with the stats, but I can shoot from anywhere. He was surrounded as soon as he caught the ball. It was interesting.
I will.
Any thoughts on that game?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, and it's an overall thought, right? We got down to the final eight. We had no one seeds, no two seeds left. And
well, Texas was still there.
Excuse me. And you're assuming that those one seeds and most of those two seeds are the bigger teams in the country, that they're going to give you more of a chance for a blowout of some sort. But with all of them gone, I felt like throughout the whole from the eight, you got San Diego and Creighton battling. You got FAU and Kansas State battling. You got Miami and Texas battling. There's no big leads. There's nothing. The only one that was just a complete blowout was UConn-Gonzaga. And overall, I think because those bigger teams were out, it led to the games being really good. I mean, we had some really good final eight games to get to four. And now we're going to see what happens. But, you know, we got no ones, no twos, no threes left. It's really interesting.
Then we move to the Saturday night game. We had, like we said, the UConn blowout. Interesting, like you mentioned, Darren, the off the ball for Timmy's fourth foul. But to me, even before that, you know, Timmy had the two fouls in the first half. He comes out first minute or so of the third of the second half, and Timmy commits that third foul on the charge. It was just out of control on his part. He's got to play a lot smarter than that. He's got to make sure he stays on the floor.
Blatant charge.
Yeah. And then the fourth foul, you know, on the replay, you look at it and you go, yeah, it's not that bad. Probably could have maybe overlooked it because it was away from the ball. You get the arm up a little bit. The guy's head snaps back. And if you're behind it like the referee was, I think, who called it, you know, you see the head snap back, you might – be a little bit more quick to call the whistle. I mean, they even reviewed it for a flagrant foul. So, but from that UConn was still in control of that game. They were up by 12. Once Timmy picked up the fourth foul, they went on a 29-10 run over the next 10 minutes. And it was never a game.
Well, it's also because with Timmy out, Gonzaga feels like they're down already, and the only way they're going to get back in this is if they start launching threes. And for a good 3 minutes, all they did was try to launch threes. And, and the 16 points became 22 points, and the 22 points became 28 points, and you turn around, and there's no way that Gonzaga's coming back in this game. So, go ahead.
And when Timmy did come back in with the four fouls real early, I mean, still about 13 minutes left in the game, just to try to keep it within distance, he was more ineffective than usual on the defensive end. And you could see his assertiveness on the offensive end had disappeared.
Yeah, he was very, very tentative on both ends of the floor. The thing was is that I thought Few would try to slow the game down at that point, and he didn't. I've never seen him so angry on the court. I mean, he looked like he was going to get a T. He usually does not berate officials very much. I mean, but usually doesn't trail very much either, guys. I mean, let's be perfectly honest. I mean, Gonzaga wins a ton, and he wins a ton. And even when they don't win, it's usually a nip and tuck game. You don't see them get blown out by anybody. That was a very odd game for a Gonzaga team, I thought. I don't know. You don't expect them to wither like that. They're the higher seed. Going into that matchup, I mean, we all thought Connecticut was better going in, maybe, but I don't know if we all thought so. I thought so anyway, but I didn't think they were better than them by 28.
No.
Maybe they would have had 5-7 point game, you know.
I think we all expected UConn to win, but not like that.
No, not as easily as it was. No, not at all.
Yeah. Then you mentioned Saturday's game, Sunday's games. We were drafting, having our fantasy baseball draft, having San Diego State Creighton up on the screen there with that volume. And you know, for most of that game, Creighton got up 17-9 in the first half. And you look at different points throughout the first half into the second half, you know, it felt like Creighton had that 7-8 point lead. San Diego State would get a little close, and then it would go right back up to 7 or 8. Creighton felt like they always had him at arm's length. And all of a sudden, down the stretch, San Diego State just played, you know, their tough, grinded-out game and found out a win for themselves. And like you said, the tough foul call there with the second left and hit the one foul shot to win the game. G, any thoughts?
No, I think you guys basically have covered it. You know, we think it's the right call, but the way that we never want to see a game end just on a couple of foul shots, but we do think it was the right call. So,
I mean, it wasn't as egregious as Hubert Davis getting that call with the follow through and the 3-point shot against the Bulls that we all cheered for, but it was that was egregious. That was awful. But this was like, you know, again, you hate to see a hard-fought game with a chance to go to a Final Four, win a regional final on a foul. But you also hate to see a player make that dumb a play. The guy gets past you in the paint. You have a 7-footer in the paint that can block shots. Let him block the damn shot. Don't give him any chance. You've played with this guy all season. You know Cockburn is huge. Let him block the shot.
To me, the guy's driving into the lane, and you've got the defender facing him up, and there's contact, and it's that charge block, unsure. Let that go.
If he would have bodied him, Kev, even if he would have bodied him to the side without extending the arms and knocked him a little off balance, but just bodied him. You let it go.
You let that go, yep. The referee, I mean, you put the referees in a tough position to have to blow the whistle, I think. So at some point, at what line is it where it becomes such a blatant foul that you have to call the foul? There is a line somewhere there.
No, it certainly is, and we hate seeing it happen, but it happened. And you know, I think I was rooting for San Diego State, so I wasn't – I hated to see the call, but I wasn't devastated that they won.
Yep.
All right, so the last game. Okay, Kev.
And then I can't really talk about much about the last game. I listened to it on the radio. We were driving. I was driving Gino home, and then I was driving. And I listened to the whole game. I listened to the whole game on the radio, so I don't have much to say from a visual perspective.
For about 25 minutes, Texas was the better team. They just dominated the game. Miami could not get into a flow. Texas just seemed like they were hitting all their shots. The backcourt was solid. Up front, they were getting a lot from everybody. Bishop, everybody was chipping in. Timmy Allen was having a good game. They were getting it from everybody. Carr obviously had a great game. Carr got hurt on a weird play. He got a little banged up. He didn't seem like he came back strong after that. He kind of tweaked himself, didn't come back strong. But, you know, that Pack-Wong-Miller combination is devastating. And we're not even talking about Poplar. And we're not talking about the big kid down low. I mean, they all have strange names. I'm forgetting to send his name for some reason. But he's the big broad kid who picked up four fouls pretty early. Miami went small. They played five guards. They didn't even try to bring somebody else in to offset it. They just played five guards. And, you know, they were hitting shots, not threes. They were hitting twos. They were breaking them down, have Pat go through the paint, Wong go through the paint, Miller go through the paint. And they were hitting open 18-footers and 15-footers. It was like watching Villanova in 85 without the three-point line. Harold Jensen just lining up. I mean, it was like one of those. They started hitting every shot. They took a very good defensive team like Texas and shot 59% from the floor. Not easy to do. Really just a masterful comeback. I mean, you don't expect it when they're down. They were down 13 with 13 to go. And I said to my wife, who didn't care, said, they cut this thing to 10. We have a game at the 10-minute mark. You got to get to 10 at 10. And they did, by the way, miraculously. They got it to 9. It was 12. They hit a shot and a foul. They got it down to 9. And then all of a sudden, it was just 7-5-3. Then all of a sudden, it was tied. And then they just took off. Just a good – I know you guys didn't watch it, but really stellar performance against a really good team by Miami.
All right. So we're down to 4. Yep. San Diego State -2 against Florida Atlantic. UConn -5.5 versus Miami. Darren, who are you going with?
You know, it's tough. I'm back and forth on the San Diego State-Florida Atlantic game all week. Back and forth all week. I am going to take Florida Atlantic to win it. Spread be damned. I'm taking Florida Atlantic and Miami to be my two winners, to win the games. I'll take the points, but I'm taking the two underdogs to win.
Okay. Kev?
On the Florida Atlantic, I'd agree with you. It's only two, so, you know, you take the 2 points as it is. I'm rooting for them. They're a great story, the 9 seed. You know, I'm always going to root for the smaller conference guy anyway, so I'm going for Florida Atlantic. I'm rooting for them, so I might as well pick them to win. The other game, I see this one very close with 5 minutes left, but I think UConn pulls away at the end and does enough to cover the 5 points and wins by about 8. But a lot of that being late in the game. I see this, you know, like I said, being almost tied probably with 5 minutes left. G?
Okay. I like San Diego State in this game. I think their defense is just too much. And you saw it against Creighton. You saw it against Alabama. I think the San Diego State defense, unless you just have a completely dynamic team, I think winds up winning this game. I'm taking San Diego State. I actually like UConn in this game. I think they're on a roll. Hurley's got them running around. Hurley's got everybody playing. I'm taking San Diego State, and I'm taking UConn. Now, Darren, of the three of us, you're the only one that picked the two underdogs, right? So if you had Florida Atlantic.
Did the Islanders just win, Kev?
Yes, they did.
Is that what the heads up was? I saw a fist pump from Kev. It was 1-1 in overtime. I just was curious if they won. Sorry.
They won the shootout.
It's okay. You have the two underdogs. So you have Florida Atlantic, Miami. You know, Miami is +450 to win it all, and Florida Atlantic is +650 to win it all. So either way, if you think one of those guys has got a chance to win two games here, bet whichever one you like and bet it big, because those are some great odds right now. At the moment, the only one
that... on Saturday, Gino, is going to be money line. It's not going to be straight up.
It needs
to be. We'll see what if I like them. Here's the thing with Miami, and the only thing reason I like Miami more than UConn in this game, UConn is yet to be tested. I want to see how UConn reacts if the game's close in the second half.
It's a good point.
They might have the best player on the court in Hawkins, but Miami comes in droves in that backcourt. And Hawkins is going to have to play a little bit harder to have to guard guys like Pack and Wong. Now, if Wong's not hitting or Pack's not hitting, this becomes a very different game. And no, Miller's not going to shoot 7-for-7 and 13-for-13 again. That was a miracle. UConn will have the advantage down low, no doubt about it. Will they have the patience to constantly go down low? That's the big question mark for me. And how they react in a close game in the second half, because they haven't had to do it. So I think Miami's been in a lot more closer games. They dug out the Drake game to start off the entire tournament. They pulled away from Houston when they made a run. They came back on Texas. They've done a lot more. They've had a lot more challenges than they've overcome. UConn's been the best team in the tournament. They haven't been threatened outside of the first half of Iona. I just think if they get threatened, if Miami's in this game with five to go, I think the opposite of Kev. I think they win it. It doesn't mean I'm right. I'm going to bet that way. It doesn't mean I'm right. But yeah, I also have a soft spot for Larrañaga, as you guys know.
Yeah.
I've been rooting for him forever since George Mason. He went to Gino and I went to the high school, same high school he went to. So he was under Jack Curran back in the day as well. So, you know, all that excitement that goes along with it. I think Miami's cutting down the nets. I think they'll be Florida Atlantic in the finale. I just think that they're a little bit – I think they're equally scrappy. I think it's a I don't know. That's just my bet right now, which means they'll lose by 20 to UConn, and it'll be UConn-San Diego State in a thriller. Either way, I just hope when we get three great games. That's all I want.
All right. Any other college basketball talk before we move on?
I'm going to do a little bit of men's, and Kev's going to chime in, and then Kev's got some women's stuff. Too many reviews. If there's anything we took out of the last 2 minutes of these games, the review for time, I get, to get the proper time, shouldn't take you more than 30 seconds to get the angle, watch when the ball went out of bounds, and set the time. You don't have to watch it 65 times. Watch it once, okay?
Darren, we said this when we were watching the games together the first weekend, and you know, there needs to be something in play where they got 30 seconds to review it. And if they can't figure out in 30 seconds, the call on the court stands. And that's the only way it's going to be quick, because otherwise it's just going to be a mess the way it is now. Kev?
How does Gene Steratore come up with the call in 30 seconds and be right about 98% of the time in 30 seconds? It can be done.
You want to know why? I'll tell you why. Because he's not looking at 16 angles.
He's got the big screens in the studio.
That's it. He's looking at it once. He's analyzing what he sees, and that's the end of it.
Just use your judgment. You should have a 30 to 45-second clock out there at max, and that's it. That thing goes off, make your decision. We can't overturn it. We couldn't make a decision. What we called on the floor stands. Done.
We need like a pitch clock for the referees to make a call.
We do. One point on it, G, and then I'm going to let you go. When I was watching, and I was rooting for Kansas State against Florida Atlantic, which sounds sacrilege to root for a big school against a small school, but I was. When they got the ball back down three, I was saying to myself, I hope Noel throws it off an FAU player and it goes out of bounds. So they have to check the clock, because Tang is the best guy in the world at drawing up out of bounds plays. And I knew he would have gotten somebody open. They didn't do that. I would have had him bounce it off a player to get the ball out of bounds so they could check the clock. I would have done that immediately. They had a few seconds. I would have done it and then drawn up a play. They didn't, but that's how bad it is. I knew you'd get 2 minutes to draw up a damn play over just checking who the ball was out of bounds on how much time was left on the clock. You'd probably get between 90 seconds and 2 minutes to draw it up. That's how silly this became. Gee, sorry.
I heard an idea this week, and I want to just throw it to you guys so that you hear it. But what if, and this goes across everybody, right? This goes across all sports. What if when they review that call, they can only review it at normal speed? right? So the 1/10 of a second, all of this stuff basically goes away because you're seeing it all. They can review it, but they can only review it at normal speed. And again, there's got to be a time frame where they have a minute left. And that takes, if that was in play, it takes care of a lot of the issues we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it defeats the purpose of replay if we're doing it at normal speed, though. Then we don't even need it.
Yeah.
Because they're doing it at normal speed to start. I mean, most plays at normal speed, I mean, there's a few that we see, but a lot of times we don't see that second deflection off the dribble at normal speed.
But they just have to make the decision quick. What it does is it eliminates the egregious bad call. That's basically what it does, right? And everything else, it's basically not gonna turn because you're seeing it the same way everybody else saw it. Just an idea I heard thrown around. So continue, please.
Second point. Jerome Tang impressed the hell out of me by going into the Florida Atlantic locker room after the game. Maybe this happens all the time. I've never heard it reported on this way, where he had the guys rally around him, congratulated them on playing great, told them they were the toughest sons of guns they played all year. They went through the toughest conference in the country. They played the Big 12. Said, just stick together. Don't let the distractions get in the way, and you guys can win this whole thing. I just thought it was a classy move from a first-year coach. I was really blown away by it. I was kind of touched. I was like, most of these guys are angry. They don't even want to do the interview after the game after they lose. Half of them are sitting there complaining about an official call, especially when it's a one-possession game. I thought this guy had a lot of poise for a first-year coach going in there doing that. It really just impressed me. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on it. I was really nice. It's a nice gesture. It's nice to see, I thought. I don't know if there's anything to comment on it, but that's what I thought. See any. What was that?
I know you watched probably a few more games maybe than we did during the season. I've only seen Kansas State really during the tournament, but he's like a classy guy on the sidelines.
You know, it's a guy that came up the hard way. He was a 20-year assistant at Baylor before he got his chance. Before that, he was coaching a small high school. I mean, he really did come up the hard way. And when he got to Baylor, that was right after the murder, right? From who was the coach? It wasn't Tubbs. So I forget who the coach was at Baylor. Bliss. Dave Bliss, was it? Was it Bliss, I think? I'm not 100% sure. And they had the murders. And so they basically almost got the death penalty. Everybody left. They rebuilt. They were the worst team in the Big 12 for forever. Just rebuilding and rebuilding and just losing and losing. But he was like the first or second hire that Drew had coming in. And a guy that, you know, he's coached high school kids and he just had a lot of class all season long. There was one game where they beat Kansas, which doesn't happen. You know, call it Kansas State a rivalry. It's only a rivalry if both teams win every now and again. Kansas dominates Kansas State. It's not really a rivalry. And after the game, the fans stormed the court. You know, it's common. And Jerome Tang said, get used to this. This is your only court storming of the season. We expect to win these games. I was just like, oh, my God. Is the guy that ridiculously is enough living here that follows Kansas State basketball? I was just like, wow. I mean, I've been following this team since Mitch Richmond. I was blown away. I was just like, oh, my goodness. And he just has that kind of class. It's just a weird thing. I just thought that was a great touch. And finally, the NIT, and I know Kev saw some of it too. So last night I put on the game at halftime. Wisconsin's up 12, 41-29. And I look at it, I'm like, wow, North Texas is one of the best defensive teams in the country. I can't see how they can win this game if they're giving up 41 points to Wisconsin. Well, they held Wisconsin to 13 points in the second half and to 3 points in the last 10 minutes and 40 seconds. I mean, Wisconsin had no answer. The amount of deflections North Texas gets in a game, they weren't all steals, but they deflect everything. They weren't hitting their shots. They weren't great from the floor, but my God, were they scrappy. And you're watching that game saying, Florida Atlantic beat this team twice, okay? Once by five, I think once by seven, something like that. There were two games within single digits from what I remember. I saw one of them. I didn't see the second one. And I was just like, this team should have been in the tournament. This team was that athletic and that aggressive. And we talked about this conference maybe getting to, And we didn't give the other teams in this conference enough credit because we're like, oh, North Texas lost a bad one to UAB. They're done, you know. And then UAB on the other side plays the opposite way. They play fast and they score. And they played Utah Valley, who covered and is the team that covers more than any other team in the country this year. And their coach parlayed that into a trip to California because Madsen got the job. Remember Mark Madsen, the Mad Dog? He got the job over at Cal today. He's leaving Utah Valley. So you have two teams with different contrasting styles, but undefeated in the conference is Kevin Porter. The whole conference is in all postseason. Something's going to give in this game because somebody has to win the title. But, man, this conference got no respect compared to what it deserved. And that goes from all of us. I mean, not just me, you, and the whole country. This team, this conference clearly deserved 2 to 3 bids, Kev. That's what I get out of this.
That's,
I don't know so if you have any thoughts on the NIT.
You summed up what I had pretty much. I was surprised. I had an eye on the game last night and just surprised. You know, Wisconsin looked like they had that game and they hung Wisconsin last 9-0-8 and pulled that game out. I think it was a 12-0 run over 9 minutes. I don't know if you can call that a run or not.
They couldn't hit either.
Yeah.
The last couple coaching moves. I'm sorry. And I know you wanted to do the WNIT as well. The women's NCAA as well. Couple coaching moves. Cooley flipped 2 Providence commits over to Georgetown already. So Providence is a little bit bare. Kim English, the new coach over at Providence, played some kid one-on-one and beat him in order to make him not go to the transfer portal. I thought that was pretty interesting. And today, Odom from Utah State left to go to VCU, which seems like a lateral move, but I guess he just wanted to come back to the East Coast because the VCU coach took over at Penn State. So Rhodes goes up to Penn State. Odom comes over to VCU. Madsen goes over to Cal. And Kim English is losing players left and right, but he played some guy one-on-one to keep him out of the transfer portal, which I thought was interesting. Anyway, I'm sorry, Kev. Take over.
Women's?
Why not? Or whatever else you want to touch on men's.
Nah, I'm done with the men's unless Gino has anything else on the men's. So the women's, just a preview, they have their Final Four this weekend also. We have the undercard, I'll call it. The first game will be the 3-seed LSU versus the 1-seed Virginia Tech. LSU is favored by 2 points here in this game, even though they're the lower seed. Virginia Tech, I think, very quietly has slipped under the radar as a 1-seed. On the women's side, you had 2 1s go down in the second round. And the other 1-seed, of course, gets all the attention. Virginia Tech's been very much under the radar here, quietly as a 1-seed getting into the Final Four. They're led by center Elizabeth Kitley and their guard Georgia Amore. Like I said, a very good year. And they would be facing an LSU team from the SEC. They started the season 23-0. We're ranked number 3, lost to South Carolina. The only other loss was to Tennessee in the SEC tournament. You would think a team with only 2 losses might be higher than a 3-seed, but they had a terrible non-conference schedule. Their big player is going to be Angel Reese. She averaged 23 points and almost 16 rebounds a game, and all but 2 games were a double-double. Darren?
And the longest eyelashes I've ever seen on a women's basketball player. Yeah. She's like dressed to the nines. She's sparkly all the time. She's definitely a female. I'm not trying to be, care, sexism. I'm just saying she wears the long eyelashes. Be that as it may, Kev.
LSU's coach, Kim Balky, she's been there. This is her second year. She won 3 titles when she was with Baylor. If you saw her outfit last weekend, it looked like Ric Flair with the feathers on her jacket, some sort of weird Ric Flair type of
get up there. I saw the highlight. I wasn't watching the game, but I did see the highlight.
Then the main event, I think the one game that anybody who follows women's basketball is looking forward to. It's the best player in the country, Caitlin Clark in Iowa, versus the number 1 team, undefeated South Carolina. This is a defense versus offense game. Iowa leads the nation in scoring at 87.5 points a game. South Carolina has one of the best defenses, giving up only 56 a game. This is really going to be South Carolina's depth against Iowa's Caitlin Clark. She put up a 40-point triple-double last weekend. One of the best performances we've seen maybe in ever in the women's side of the tournament.
Well, actually better than any man ever did either. Most points ever in a triple-double by male or female.
Yep. That was funny is that they also have two other scorers on there, Zanano and Warnock. But South Carolina only has two girls averaging double figures. It's Zaya Cook and Aaliyah Boston. But they go 10 deep. They've got 10 girls averaging over 10 minutes. They've only got three averaging over 20. You bring in somebody like a Camilla Cardoza, who's 6'7", comes in and blocks everything underneath. I mean, to have that weapon off the bench. This is going to be probably South Carolina's biggest test to see if they can get through this game and stay undefeated. So that's my little preview of the women's Final Four matchups.
Gino, you had your finger to your head pulling the trigger. Here's the thing. As much as we want to make fun of Kev for being all about this because it's only South Carolina, the fact of the matter remains, G, this game is actually must-watch game if you're a basketball fan. You're going to see the contrasting styles. I expect South Carolina to win this game by 20. But at the same point in time, when you have a scorer on the other side with Caitlin Clark, this could become a game. It's going to be an interesting – and they play quarters in the women's game. So it's going to be an interesting first two, maybe even first three quarters. It's good, you know, you want to see if they're going to be able to score or if South Carolina is going to control the tempo and keep the game low. Because if the game's a low-scoring game, Iowa will struggle. They don't play a half-court game, nor do they defend the same way. It's like I was telling Kev off mic. We were talking about the Big Ten when this started, and we're like, I don't know how good the Big Ten is. You know, we don't know what to expect. And Iowa got through. Indiana and Ohio State did not. This is actually a really fun matchup. I can't tell you I know enough about Vatek. I mean, the things you read, that's the most I know about Vatek. I don't know anything else beside that. And I didn't know it before you said it, so therefore I had no knowledge of it. So this is cool. The only 2-seed getting through was not UConn, who we all thought would, just by reputation, it was Iowa. So we'll see what happens in the women's Final Four. Yeah, I made fun of you, Gino. What do you got?
what do you like, G?
I don't like any of them. I have absolutely no interest in women's college basketball. I'm sorry.
Love it. That's what we wanted.
Let's move on to some baseball talk. Opening day is tomorrow, boys. Hope springs eternal, and baseball is on the field tomorrow. A couple of things just to hit on with baseball. A couple of things to look for. We'll do a baseball preview, but just a couple of things. Rule changes. Game times are way down. Spring training game times were 2 hours, 31 minutes, Darren. That was the average.
Down 26 minutes. Gotta love it.
Gotta love it. Gotta love it.
Spring training, Gino.
Another thing before we get into a couple of Yankee things. Big item to be watching for as we head into the season is what do the Angels wind up doing with Ohtani as we get closer to the trade deadline? It'll be a major factor, especially if the Angels are way out of this. Are they going to trade him? Are they going to keep him? We're going to see what happens because a trade to anybody will yield a huge profit for their organization in the form of prospects or young players. So we'll see what happens with that. Yankees made some news this week. Volpe makes the team, Darren. Peraza goes down. I know you're loving it. What do you got to say?
Listen, if you're going to let a guy compete for a position and he wins the job, give him the goddamn job. Volpe is the most exciting rookie we've had on this team that's making his debut in a major league game since Jeter. That's how long it's been. We've had other guys come up with a cup of coffee in September. This is actually a guy that was young that's getting to start the season. This is fun stuff. This is what you live for. You want to see this young number 11 superstar playing shortstop for us. I am ecstatic. I don't know. Okay. We don't know how good he's going to be, but you know what? I'm pumped. He's better than Peraza.
I need you, I need you to lower the pumpness, though. I have to tell
why?
You. Because
why?
I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
Homegrown, this, you don't like homegrown players. But
no,
I
do like homegrown players. And this is what my problem, though, is that you and every other Yankee fan is already talking about him as Jeter. And it's a wrong attitude to take because he may come in here and hit 150 and be down in June and come back up in August and light the place on fire.
You when know, did he, I say he was Jeter? First guy. When did I say he was Jeter? I said the most exciting prospect since Jeter.
There it is.
I said he's Jeter because I say he's the most exciting prospect. No, yes. I didn't say he's better. No, that actually makes no sense what you're saying.
No.
I
it makes
he's the
a
most
ton
exciting
of
prospect
sense.
We've had up here to start the season since Jeter. Can you disagree with that?
And that's, I do disagree,
can you disagree
with that.
With that
because
he's not the most exciting prospect.
Because
he's not the most exciting prospect.
Because saying it and the fact that he's playing the same position automatically puts into play a comparison. And it's wrong. Okay, tons of guys. Jeter was up here, never went down. It is. And Jeter went up. Jeter was up here. Jeter was up here, never went down. Okay, tons of guys have gone down, come back up. We don't know what this kid's going to do yet.
Fine.
I know.
That was number
exactly.
six. Came up as number seven. Gino,
exactly.
All I said was most exciting prospect since 98 when we had Jeter.
And,
didn't say
and
he
I
was
hate
Jeter.
It. And I hate it. Because
why?
You and every other Yankee fan is saying the same exact thing.
So here's
and
my
I don't
question.
Want that to be the
who's
pressure
the most exciting
on the kid.
Prospect we've had? How is this wrong?
Listen.
Who's
no,
more exciting?
Tell me.
It's listen, it's
who's
not
more
the
exciting
words.
Jeter?
It is not the words of the statement. It is what you're saying as you're saying it. Because just saying it.
Your argument made no sense to me just now.
All right. You're
saying
down.
It puts a comparison
Kevin.
In everybody's head.
Look,
okay.
Let me fix it for you, Darren. He's the most exciting prospect the Yankees have called up since 1996.
Yeah. Fair enough. We haven't had a guy start the season this exciting that we
since
were pumped up on that was 21. That has made it through and got up a year earlier than was expected. How about that?
It's fine. I hear the Yankee fans.
I mentioned
Jeter's
name because he was
the
last guy, not because they play the same position, G.
I understand, but just the mention of it puts it into play. And I hate it. And I want the kid to do well up here. But just saying
like
it that I do. And just saying it, listen, my daughter went to school with his aunt. I've seen him when he was a kid before he went to college. All right. But it doesn't matter. I want him to do well, but I just hate that the Yankee fans are already putting all this pressure on him. And anytime they mention Jeter in the same sentence, that's what happens. Now, here's one other thing I want to just bring up to you. And I didn't say this, but a gentleman at work, I'm going to call him Mr. C. Mr. C
okay.
today said to me, I hope the Yankees don't screw this up because they are not good at this, which is bringing up young kids from the start of the season. They're not good at it, as evidenced by the last time this happened, which was Derek Jeter. Okay? We had other guys in here in that time frame that fizzled out because the Yankees didn't know how to control them, didn't know how to play them, brought them up the wrong times. Gary Sanchez, I mean, the list goes on and on. I hope that's not the case with him because he is – could be a really, really good player on this team.
Well, here's the thing, though, and I know Kevin's going to say something too. Aaron Judge, I thought we waited too long for, but he had a miserable season. Then they brought him up, and the whole thing. Whatever. I think every player is different. I think that you're sitting there worrying about a semantic of an argument that I'm going to jinx something. If we're going to play this little jinx game, then I can't say anything ever. I mean, you know, it's like Sebastian Maniscalco hanging the freaking red pepper from the front thing to keep the maloikia out of your life. Listen, I'm not comparing him to Jeter. They're different players. This is a guy that's going to slug the ball. Jeter was never going to slug the ball. We didn't know we were getting from Jeter. Jeter was just a good, solid guy that everybody fell in love with. This is a kid that's the next generation. And when you get the next generation, if Kevin sat there and said, I think Beatty's the most exciting third base prospect we have since David Wright, you would be mad at that? I mean, I can't see that being a bad thing. Because,
no, because
you're not comparing him to Wright. This is the best guy we've had since Wright came up. I hope he can do the job, just like I hope Volpe can do the job. Listen, if Peraza was better, I'd hope Peraza can do the job. But I just think that sometimes – I don't think it's – listen, he's going to get pressure. He's playing shortstop for the New York Yankees. Opening day, 21 years old. This is it. This is the game. Either you perform or you don't. I don't know. We do get mad at the kid if he doesn't have a good start. He gets sent down. He gets sent down. Joe D never got sent down. Mantle did.
That wasn't my point. My point is, I think the Yankee fans are going all crazy about this, and comparisons are already coming out to Jeter. And I don't want to hear it.
Matter
because
is,
I want
the way
the kids
baseball
to play.
Is designed now. The way they designed this sport is almost to keep the young player from coming up too soon. They hold them, you know, for years, and so they can sit there and have max out the amount of time they get to keep them. I think that's where more of the excitement is from than the fact that it's a comparison to Jeter. I think it's more exciting that they have a guy that they that won his job and won up. Listen, I would have been pumped if Dominguez made it too.
We can disagree because that is the way I feel, and I've heard too many Yankee fans already come up with that, and I hate it already. I just want the kid to play well and be here.
Yeah, be the voice of reason, Kev, because the two of us are at odds.
There is no voice of reason. That's my opinion.
Bring the kid up.
Obviously, we're both unreasonable. We can't agree. Anyway, that's what
I want the kid up, Kev. That's not what I'm saying. I just don't like the Yankee fans that are making comments about comparing him to Jeter. That's my problem. He won the job. He should be here.
And he's the most exciting prospect since Derek Jeter came up.
All right. Let's move on to the Mets.
But I mean, to the point, though, I mean, you know, Yankees have done this. The time has been off with this guy or that guy. Like you said, Darren Judge almost came up a little bit too late. Think of other Yankees. What was the outfielder? Floreal.
He's untouchable. Can't trade him. Now he can't hit.
The Mets have had their
fair
share.
He's currently on the roster, believe it or not.
And the fact of the matter is, because he has no more options, G.
I know.
He had 163 in spring, and they kept him on the roster because they have no other options.
How long were the Mets fans waiting for Martinez, the outfielder, F-Mart?
Yeah.
Not a comparison. It's just the Yankees don't do this well, so hopefully they do this one well. They don't do this well. Well, again, I'm not making a comparison to the Mets. I'm making
Mets
a comparison to the Yankees in the last 25 years. They're horrible at this. And let's hope they don't screw the kid up.
Brett Beatty should be in the lineup tomorrow.
It's not a comparison to the Mets.
And he's there.
I don't care what they do with Beatty, to be honest. I care what they do with Volpe.
I do care what they do with Beatty because I think that, as a baseball fan, I know what Eduardo Escobar is. I want to see what Brett Beatty is.
Escobar gives you the safety net. If Beatty struggles for the first month, which I don't think he would, but if he struggles for the first month, he's sending back down for like 2 or 3 months. And you know you've got Escobar there. My problem is going to be, I'll take the other approach and say, Beatty goes down to AAA, does what we think he's going to do in AAA. Mets are struggling a little bit. Escobar's not hitting. Now Beatty's got to come up, and the Mets fans are going to look at him as a savior. Oh, here comes Beatty. Now our season's saved. That puts much more pressure than if you start the kid opening day. To me, that's my opinion.
Okay.
Beatty's
going to
be the minors and get into a slump down there because he's so depressed that he should have made the team. And all of a sudden, he doesn't come up here till July.
Yeah.
August before he gets his head on. I'm just saying. I don't know. I think the best player in spring training should win the job.
I agree.
The
I'm
best
glad
player
Volpe's
did.
Up here.
Volpe won it. Beatty won the job. He didn't get it for some reason. The Mets went another way.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not saying the Mets are wrong. I'm not saying the Yankees are right. I'm saying I'm excited about what the Yankees did more than I'm excited about what the Mets did.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather see Beatty small, up here.
I'm sorry. Small teams, small market teams, they do this stuff better than everybody else because they have no choice. They do it out of necessity. Large market teams doesn't happen quite as much. When was the last time you were excited about a Boston rookie? Was it Dustin Pedroia? I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, it's not like it's the where the superstars come up on these big market teams and tear it up. They don't generally. I think it's Pedroia last time I remember a Red Sox that was a rookie that was just dynamic. We just don't see it on the – I'm not trying to pick on the Red Sox. I'm just saying it as a matter of fact statement. The Dodgers may be doing a little bit better than everybody else. I'll give them the nod. Their minor league system has been the best in baseball probably the last dozen years. Yeah. But everybody else I see struggles.
Yeah. Maybe
I don't know. I hope the kid is great. Yeah, Houston's good too. But they did it all at the same time. I mean, they all came up at once. But yeah, you're right. They did a great job with that too. I don't know who came up in September and who started the season with them as much. I'd love to tell you I remember that. I just don't. But you're right. Houston has done a great job with that as well.
Any other baseball points? We're going to do a baseball preview next week, but any other baseball points before we move on, guys?
Just one. We did our draft, and what I realized is that there are so many mediocre to below mediocre players once we get past like the first six rounds of a draft. You're sitting there wrestling for a guy to hit 260 because he's got upside, or a pitcher that can strike out more than a batter an inning even though his whip sucks. I mean, we were like – it was like grabbing straws. This is like the weakest middle of a draft I can remember in a long time, not to mention the bottom of the draft. Just my take, guys. I was very uninspired by how baseball was last year with the low batting averages and the home runs, because everybody looked like crap, especially on the offensive end.
Yep.
I don't know. I'm
looking forward to watching the pitching tomorrow.
We've got some good matchups here. Yahoo putting these guys on the DL so I can pick up free agents. I'm still waiting for them. I can't pick up players because I don't want to make extra moves that are unnecessary. I'm just waiting to put these three guys on the DL so I can get my guys. I can't even do it. Anyway, sorry. Just a vent.
Everybody's looking forward to that big Yankees-Giants rivalry to open up the season.
Yeah, the Giants and the Phillies, the Yankees to open up with. Really, enough of this stupid fucking rule. I don't even want to play interleague ball at all. I want to see the Red Sox 19 times. That's what I want to see. I want to see, and you know what? I want to see 12 times with the A's. I don't know why. Just let's keep it in the league. Enough of this interleague crap. It's not exciting. I'm sorry. I don't care. Yankees Mets had a little bit of steam when both teams are good. Fine. I don't care. Actually, I hate the series now because all the pressure's on the Yankees. It's no fun.
It was interesting in the 90s to see it.
Yeah, now it sucks. As a Yankee fan, there's nothing but pressure. I get to hear Met fans tell me, oh, we took 3 out of 4 from you. You got me. And you guys are going to play one extra round. That's it. That's all it was.
How come we got stuck with 4 games against the Yankees every year? And
yeah, no, it's just annoying as hell. I don't know. Gino loves I went on that rant. Anyway.
Mets opened up with the Marlins. They've got Scherzer and Alcantara as probably the pitching matchup of the day.
It certainly is.
And the other interesting one to watch is the Rangers and Phillies open up. You've got, let's see what Jacob DeGrom does for the Rangers. He'll be facing up against Aaron Nola of the Phillies. That should be a really good pitching matchup, too.
An interesting one also is Chicago and Houston, just because we're going to see Framber Valdez become the ace of the Astros. And Dylan Cease getting his first time with the White Sox. These are two good young pitchers. Be interesting to see if they're able to carry it over. They both have had other guys above them in the rotation before. I wonder how the pressure is going to be for either one of those guys being the number one guy. Because, you know, I hope it's not a problem for Cease because that'll hurt my team. But at the same time, I just think that's an interesting opening day matchup as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on. Kev, NBA?
NBA, this weekend coming up, the Hall of Fame should be announced. List was leaked early. Looks like the list is going to be Dwayne Wade, Dirk Nowitzki, Pau Gasol, Tony Parker, Greg Popovich, and on the women's side, Becky Hammon. That's a pretty damn good Hall of Fame class.
I still hate Popovich.
Why?
He ruined the league, but all these rest days for the NBA players. I can't get past it. Sorry.
Okay.
I really hate what he did to the NBA.
The Tony La Russa of the NBA.
Exactly.
Huh?
My starter goes 4 innings, and I bring in a different guy every inning. Hate La Russa. Hate Popovich. Listen, Popovich is a better coach in the NBA than La Russa was a manager in baseball, in my opinion. Both very good. I think that Popovich was reached the top of his craft better. May have had better players, too. The NBA is a little bit more, I have two superstars and I can beat you back then. But at the same time, I just hate his version of the NBA. That's just me.
Yep.
But Hall of Fame coach.
Yep. Tonight for Phoenix, KD is making his debut finally, playing against game's on right now. Oh, I forget. Of course, we're in a commercial. I forget who they're playing tonight. But anyway, he's making his debut tonight. On the other side of this ledger, Ben Simmons, his former teammate, is shut down for the season again. This guy ever gotten to play at this point in the NBA again?
They're playing the T-Wolves, by the way. I just looked it up.
Thanks.
No problem.
The other team that made the trade out West, Dallas, they lost again tonight. They are now 8-14 since the trade, and they have fallen from the fourth seed down to the 11th seed and out of the playoffs if the season ended today. Talk about a disaster of a trade, as it turned out.
It's been a lot for that? A guy that's not doing anything.
Yeah, and he's missed how many of the games already, too. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what happened with Dallas? Just Kyrie, is it Kyrie stink?
Is Kyrie like he hasn't won a title? I mean, the thing about Kyrie and Doncic, they both do best when they control the ball and distribute it. And there's only one ball.
Yeah.
Remember those Hawks teams in the 80s that had Moses and Kevin Willis and Dominique and Reggie Theus and Doc Rivers? And so Doc was the only guy willing to pass. The other four guys wanted to shoot all the time, and they never got past the Celtics, even though talent-wise, it looked like they were superior. Sometimes you just need guys that are willing to be – you need role players in NBA basketball. You just do. You need guys that 3-and-D and do different things. And I think that right now – I'm not saying Dallas doesn't have them. I'm not saying the West isn't good. I just think that they just can't figure out who should be controlling the ball in big spots down the stretch because they're in most of these games. They just don't find a way to finish them off.
Yep. Eastern Conference, the top four seeds are now clinched. Milwaukee, Boston, Philly, and Cleveland. Knicks look like they are far enough back of Cleveland. They'll be the five seed. I think they have enough cushion on Brooklyn. Yeah. Brooklyn,
they beat Miami tonight.
That helps the Nets out a lot. Brooklyn and Miami are separated by a game and a half right now for that 6 and 7 seed. You don't want to be in that play-in game. Otherwise, I think the Eastern Conference is pretty much set. Out West, you've got Denver and Memphis have clinched. Sack. This third should be clinching maybe tonight if everything works out right for them.
All they have to do is win. All they have to do is win. They clinch.
They would break the longest current playoff drought in every major sport. Unfortunately, I don't want to bring up who's next on the list to be the longest drought in sports right now.
I can say it in four letters, and it starts with a J.
Yep. And still, from Phoenix in fourth down to Utah in 12th. Separated by 4.5 games still. Still crazy out there in the West.
Absolutely.
As we were watching the Minnesota-Phoenix game, they put up the thing about Minnesota. They put up the last 10 days or so. They've been anywhere from a 10 to a 6 seed, and it's changed every day. So we're not going to know until the end of the season. And everybody's got about 6 games left or so.
Yeah, we're down to the nitty-gritty here.
Yep. Any other NBA points before the power rankings?
Not go for it, Kev. Lead the way.
All right. Number one, still the best record in the league, Milwaukee. Number two, Boston seems like they were slumping a little bit a couple weeks ago. They've bounced back. I know they lost their last one, but they've been pretty hot since then. So I've got them at two. I was torn between a couple of teams here. I kept Denver at three. They went through a slump, but they won 4 in a row. So I think they've sort of righted the ship a little bit. I've got them at 3. Memphis has been red hot. They've won 7 in a row going into tonight. John Morant's back playing. They lost tonight, of course. But going in, they were 9-1 in their last 10. Now they're rating 2 of the last 10. I got them up at 4. Philly struggled a bit lately. They won tonight, of course. They lost a couple in a row. But I've got them at 5. I was going to put Sac at 5 just to say they were ending the playoff drought. I kept Philly at 5, Sacramento 6.
I have the same 5, Kev.
Okay.
Milwaukee, Boston, Denver, Memphis, Philadelphia. Darren?
I'm different. I have Milwaukee 1, Boston 2. I have Memphis 3. They're playing really good ball. I have Cleveland 4. They're playing really good as well. Yep. And I put Denver as my 5 with Philly and Sac just off the pace. 17 guys in this league average 25 points a game now. This is how offensive this stupid league is.
Wow.
Embiid, 33 points, 11 rebounds, 4.5 assists. Jokic 24-9, 12-7-9-9. I mean, just the two centers that are probably fighting for the MVP. It's pretty crazy. Anyway, back to you, G.
Okay. NBA, let's any NHL? Want to hit on some NHL a little bit, NHL?
Yeah, just a couple points. There's only three guys in the league with 100 points. Two are Edmonton's guys. You know, we have 140 from McDavid and 114 from Draisaitl. Kucherov has 102, and it's the quietest 102 points you've ever heard of because no one mentions him. Just like there's only two 50-goal scorers. McDavid has 60. Pasternak has 50. Quietest 50-goal scorer in the league. You know, Ullmark has a 937 save percentage. That seems ungodly. Save 937. Gustafson for the Wild and Sorokin are playing great. 932, 924. But Ullmark's 937. It's nuts. I just thought that these stats were a little interesting. Just how dominant McDavid is next to the rest of the league. That guys like Kucherov and Pasternak, who are stars, don't get any notoriety. If it wasn't for Ovechkin's age and his continuation, he wouldn't even be talked about. It's just that this Edmonton, that line in particular, but this whole team is dominant. And because they don't have a goaltender, they probably don't get through.
For McDavid, 140 points is the most since 1996.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Wow. It's just scary. And the Ullmark save percentage is great. I mean, Gustafson saving 932, and he's not number one. And he's carrying Minnesota. 932.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to get excited when we used to see 915, 918. Sorokin's at 924. Nobody even talks about it. Probably went up tonight. But he was 924. It's like, what's going on here? These goalies are out of this world. And you got guys like McDavid setting point records, and Ullmark's got a 94% save percentage. Unbelievable. Anyway, that's my point on hockey. Top five, Kevin?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, playoffs, Western Conference, everything's still wide open. Nobody's clinched yet, even though we feel like we know the top three in the Central and the Pacific, and the wild card seems like it's pretty much down to about four teams. You've got Seattle, Winnipeg in the lead right now, Calgary, Nashville right behind. What gets me out west is the teams that are just red hot. Minnesota 7-1-2 in the last 10. Colorado 9-1. Vegas 8-2. LA 7-1-2. Edmonton 8-1-1. These teams are playing well to get into the playoffs. There's very few teams out there struggling, you know, hanging on, trying to desperately to get into the playoffs. They are really playing well. Eastern Conference.
The Islanders, Kev. The Islanders play up and down to the competition every damn night.
They do. Eastern Conference, Atlantic, Boston, and Toronto have clinched. Tampa is about a game away from clinching. Metropolitan, the top three have clinched. Carolina, New Jersey, and the Rangers. Islanders with a 2-1 win tonight in a shootout over Capitals. They've got 87 points. They're 5 clear of Pittsburgh and 6 clear of Florida. And Florida's only got a game in hand. So the Islanders are starting to – I'm not going to jinx it. They currently lead the wild card.
Watch. The Rangers might catch the Devils. They're only 2 points behind them. They're playing unbelievable lately.
Yeah, the Rangers are 8-1-1. They've won 3 in a row. The Devils have slumped. They're 4-4-2. And Carolina's slumped. They're 4-5-1.
To think if the Islanders hold on to a playoff spot, we may have in April with the Islanders, Rangers, Devils, Knicks, Nets, Yankees, and Mets all playing at the same time. It's going to be some crazy stuff going on in New York, let me tell you.
When's the last time that ever happened?
Been a long time.
Yep. So, any other hockey points or top five?
Go for it, bro.
All right, top five. Obviously, Boston stays one. Don't even have to talk about that. Two, I'm going to go out west. I'm going to put Vegas up to two because they're playing. They're hot. They've got the best record out west. I dropped Carolina to three, New Jersey to four, just because they've been struggling, like I said. And five, you mentioned them. I actually put the Rangers at five. 8-1-1 their last 10, 1-3 in a row. And like you said, they may be on the verge of possibly catching the Devils and getting home ice, really, for that playoff series against the Devils. That's my top five.
I go Boston 1, Carolina 2. I got New Jersey hanging in at 3 with the Rangers right behind them at 4. And number 5 right now, only because they are just so red hot, I have the Edmonton Oilers.
So we're all a little different. I have Boston 1, Carolina 2. I have Colorado 3. I think they're red hot. Yeah. I have the Kings 4, and I have the Rangers 5 with the Devils 6 and Vegas 7. And I could have changed anywhere from 2 to 7 on any one of those teams. Edmonton's just off right there, too, and I hate Edmonton, but they're right there, too. It's just the West has exploded. The big teams are beating up the weak teams. They're not playing each other much, but the last week and a half, 2 weeks, we're going to see them playing each other a little bit more. So it's going to see what happens in that West.
Yeah, those 5 teams I mentioned before, just scorching hot out West. You pick whichever one you want in the top 5 right now.
Yeah, I put Colorado because I think they're 9-1 in the last 10, and they've just been playing lights out. They're really good. I think they're going to overtake that division. I mean, it's close, but Minnesota's got to buy a point. With Gustafson playing lights out too, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Good hockey though. We should have good playoffs in the West and in the East. I mean, right now you're looking at it. You're looking at Islanders, Carolina, Rangers, Devils. These are fun things. And you're looking at Boston playing against Pittsburgh. Another fun series. You got Crosby against the best team in hockey. This is the stuff that you want to see. You want to see these good teams play each other. Toronto, Tampa. They played each other last year. They play each other again this year. I mean,
that's gonna be a hell of a series.
Exactly. I mean, part of me would like to see Florida overtake Pittsburgh for the 8th spot just because, I don't know, they're an interesting squad. Even though I hate Southern hockey and I don't love Sidney Crosby, I'd love to see him not get there. Just my take. Just by the way, quick baseball note just came across. The Padres have pushed their game from 4:10 to 9:40 tomorrow because of the threat of rain in San Diego. Well, it doesn't happen very often. It happens like twice a year.
Rain.
So to start, there's a threat of rain during the day, so they moved the game back to 9:40 start Eastern time. So it'll be 6:40 our time. I'm just saying. I just came across my phone as someone that follows the Padres. I get my little notes. Anyway.
Okay. See? Kev?
Golf? I was going to touch on golf real quick.
And that yourself out.
Match play was this weekend. I'm just going to go down. The final four, you're looking there, and you had a chance for Scottie Scheffler versus Rory McIlroy in the final matchup. But no, Sam Burns beat Scheffler 1-up, and Cam Young beat Rory 1-up. And all of a sudden, you're stuck with a Sam Burns-Cam Young final, which went 6-5 to Sam Burns.
Baseball was on. They're both good golfers, but, you know, not the same.
Good, but when you had a chance for Rory and Scheffler.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been awesome to watch. This week is the Valero Texas Open. Now, you look at the ESPN, the featured matchups they've got that they do on the web. You've got the likes of Stuart Sink, Davis Love III, Matt Kuchar, Padraig Harrington. Not the strongest field.
Anyone under 50?
But I think the best group is probably Ricky Fowler, Hideki Matsuyama.
It probably is.
Obviously, all the big guys are going to be taking this week off. Next week, we will really focus in on it's the Masters.
Best tournament of the year.
Yep.
I love the U.S. Open, too, but the Masters kicks off golf for me, and I love it.
Yep.
Just a couple of – you have anything else, golf?
Nope.
A couple of quick horse racing things. Talked about it last week. The Louisiana Derby, major upset. Okay, and Instant Coffee, the favorite, finished a well-beaten 5th, right? Here's what happens. I told you there was no speed in this race, and there wasn't. First quarter in 24-7. Half was 49 and change. Ouch. Three quarters at 114-9. So, so basically there was nothing going on. And Kings Barnes just held the pace and won the race. There was no pace for Instant Coffee. So the whole thing is, I'm not saying Instant Coffee is a world beater. I'm not saying he's the best horse in the world. I'm just saying a closer with no pace has no shot. And there was nothing he could do. Basically, he just was buried. The Jeff Ruby Stakes, the ones we never heard of, was won by the horse I mentioned last week, Two Phils. I said Two Phils probably the best horse in the race. He won it. Won it going away, actually. Another slow race, 23-7, 49. I'm like, wow, nobody. But he came flying. It was like 48 and change. I'm sorry, just under 49. But he came flying, and he was able to do it. But there was no pace in either race. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see the Derby. This week we got two really big preps. You got the Florida Derby with Forte, the horse I've been touting. since January. With Erod Ortiz and Pletcher, goes, he's 4-5 now. Bet you he goes off 3-5. Coming out of the 11, though, we'll see what happens there. The four betting favorites in this race are the 9, 10, 11, and 12. He's the 11. All the big horses got bad posts out wide. The other one's the Arkansas Derby. It's a little more wide open. Reincarnate is the lukewarm favorite. Goes off at 5-2. Red Root 1 is 3-1 with Gaffalone aboard. Rocket Can with Alvarado and Mott is 4-1. And Angel of Empire with Pratt and Cox is 9-2. All these horses lost their last prep race except for Angel of Empire. Comes off the win at the Risen Star. So that's a race that you want to see who wins because there's a lot of four tactical horses. I'd be stunned if Forte doesn't win every race he's in at this point. The Derby's always different because you never know when he gets the one post. You don't like him. You know, you get a bunch of different things that can happen in the Derby. But a lot going on in horse racing. We're coming down to the wire. We'll get more into the Derby as we get closer. Gee.
Just let me hit on a couple of NFL things going on. Rodgers' trade to the Jets is still on hold. Apparently, they're trying to negotiate on what the second pick is going to be. We'll see what happens.
What I heard, G, is that now it's about that they're down to two number twos, but it's about the compensation if Rodgers retires. The Jets want to pick back in 25 if Rodgers only plays one season.
Plays 1 year. Yep.
I mean, I don't think it's an unreasonable request, to be honest. No. Just in my opinion, I'm not saying it has to be a one or anything. I'm just saying if you got a three or a four back in 25 because Rodgers only plays 1 year, I think it would be a fair trade.
Washington Commander sale, it's in process. There's two bids going on. We'll see if the bids are accepted. Both bids are registered to be $6 billion, which is just getting unbelievably crazy. And the other issue that's going on right now in the NFL is Lamar Jackson. He put out that he wants to be traded. I don't know. I thought by them making him protecting him, that making him a franchise tag, that he was able to pursue the trade, but now he wants to be traded. We'll see what's going to happen with that. Right now, rumored teams where he may go, Colts, Commanders, Falcons, Pats. I don't know where he's going to wind up. But my odds are still on that he figures out a way and he signs with the Ravens, but we're going to see what happens with that mess. It's becoming a mess now. And NFL draft, less than a month away. Guys, any other points?
Yeah. Stupid proposal that came up that they put on the table, but looks like they're okaying the fact that teams can play two games in short weeks now. Not every team's going to have to play Thursday night. You can have a team have two Thursday night games. But the stupidest thing that they mentioned, they tabled, they're talking about flexing to a Thursday night game from a Sunday game.
Stupid.
First off, there should be no Thursday night football. The only time there should be Thursday football is Thanksgiving Day. That's it. There should be no Thursday night football games unless you want to arrange it where you give the teams a bye week the week before so they can play Thursday night. Other than that, there should be no Thursday night games. And the fact that now you want to flex it, you mean you get one, you pick one game a year to go to, and you go in on a Sunday, and they're going to flex it 2 weeks beforehand to a Thursday night? What about the fans? Darren?
My point on this is simple. The NFL should have a doubleheader every Monday. Take the Thursday night. None of us mind it. You do a 6 o'clock and a 9 o'clock. You do a Monday night doubleheader. If you want to do 7 and 10, do 7 and 10. You know what? I think that we're better off than doing the Thursday night. I think the players would like it better. I think the fans would love the doubleheader. I think that even if you overlapped it a little bit and you did and you did 7 and 9, something like that, just to get two games going. I think people would be really into it, and I think that it would be a lot more. They'd still be sellable. You could have two different networks. Each network gets their own game. We don't need the stupidity of the Thursday night game outside of Thanksgiving. I like the night game on Thanksgiving. I like adding the third game. I think it's kind of cool, even though I'm a guy that watches the Egg Bowl between Mississippi and Mississippi State. It's a little traditional for me, but I'm fine with the third game. If it's a team I like, I'll watch it too. I do not like this Thursday game. The game's never good, except for last year. Usually the home team wins relatively easily. and there's no practice. They really don't. They do a couple walkthroughs and that's it. And all you do is risk injuries. Why do it? Why weaken the product? Do the doubleheader Monday. Call it a day. Monday
night
football.
I like the idea, Darren.
What did you say?
See if you could see. I like the idea. See if you could submit it to the competition committee, because I think that's a hell of an idea.
Oh, they love me over at the competition committee, I'm sure. But I just think that the fan would appreciate. We don't need.
I would. Yeah, I agree.
No, I know. Two nights of football is plenty.
Like I said, the only thing that makes sense is if you have a team come off a bye week, if you want to keep the Thursday night games. And I know you can't give teams bye weeks week one or two. But that gives everybody then a week and a half to get ready for that game, and you've got the week and a half after that. But other than that, these short weeks, the games are not good.
Yeah. No, agreed.
It's not fun. I'm not trying to be selfish. It's hard to bet. It's just an annoying thing.
And it's on Amazon Prime, which I don't have, so I don't watch games anyway.
Yeah, no, I mean, whatever. You know, it's just I'll give you my Prime account if you really want to see one, Ken. But
we can't share. We're not – that Darren will not share his account with me.
No, I'm not allowed to. My wife will go nuts.
In case the Amazon executives are listening to this podcast. Please.
I'm not sharing the account anyway. I barely watch the Thursday night game as it is. I'm sure we have dozens of people. We've been red flagged. Anyway.
Yep.
Anything else?
We're going to be reported.
Anything else, Kevin G?
I see Gino doing this.
Well, Gino's had enough of the show. Gino's mad at me about the Volpe comment and every other Yankee fan. But anyway, we are Gino's the sports. Been, I'm sorry,
Gino's,
Kevin.
Gino's been done since we talked women's college basketball.
Gino aged 12 years during this show tonight because of women's college basketball talk. We are the Sports Kings from Queens. I'm Darren. I'm here with Kevin and the aforementioned Gino. Download our podcast wherever you can get your podcast, whether it be an Apple product, whether it be TuneIn, whether it be Spotify. Share our information about us. Ask us questions. Tell us what you want to hear more. We want to do a better job. We hope to do more fun stuff as we go forward. You know, we're coming up where most of the seasons are coming down to playoffs with baseball and is kicking off, and basketball and hockey coming down to the playoffs, and we're finishing up March Madness. The draft will be here shortly. We have the Masters, which we're going to talk about, the Kentucky Derby, lots of stuff. But if there's something that we're not covering enough, let us know. If there's something we're covering too much, let us know. Anyway, without any further ado, may your sports be with you.